Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by. Well, you know, some people send me videos all the time and post videos, and I watch a lot of them, especially when they have to do with our behavior. And this week, somebody sent me one that really is an example of what I talk about when I talk about being the leader in your circle, in your domain, in your life, especially if you have a family. And being a leader doesn't necessarily mean you have to be mom or dad. You could be the big sister. You could be the big brother. You could be the aunt, the uncle. You could be the grandparent. Being the leader usually means that you know your way, right? You know how to get where you're going. And let's face it, but that's not as easy as it sounds. And I certainly get that. Having felt like someone's leader most of my life, I realize that sometimes I don't know where I'm going either. So it's a big responsibility, a very, very big responsibility. But the video that was sent to me was everything that I worry about. People screaming in the car, road rage. People fighting at home. People showing poor civil behavior in the outside world. It's a great video, and somebody took a lot of time and really understood the essence of being a leader. So, what I would like to say to everybody is that if you can, I'd like you to watch the video. If you can't, I want you to know that there's somebody almost always watching you. And sometimes you set the tone for how that somebody is going to behave. So I'm going to bring in Shelley. I'm going to ask her while we're on the air to get on Facebook and look at this video, because it's very nicely done and speaks volumes. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
That's good. That's good.
And nice breakfast Saturday, a little surprising. Had a couple of people I haven't seen in a long time show up, so that was very, very nice.
Yeah, yeah. It is important to stay close to friends, and, of course, we know that. We get that. But it is nice when, I mean, gosh, there was, what was there? There was like 10 or 11 of us that were there Saturday.
Right.
It was great.
And there were at least,
it was great.
Yeah, there were at least 4 people that were there that I didn't know were going to be there. That was a real treat for me to see them, especially one from the UK that I haven't seen probably in close to 2 years. And had spent time, you know, dealing with her when we were at the Institute and stuff. So that was a treat. And then obviously seeing your son Mike and seeing how well he's doing was huge.
Yep, he is doing very well, and seems to be coping with changing so many things, which is a really, really wonderful thing to be able to do, because it's not so easy to make those kind of changes when you're in your 40s. It's hard to make those kind of changes anytime, but there's something about feeling like you're really where you're supposed to be when you're in your 40s, you know?
True.
So
putting it.
So this are you near your computer? Can you get on Facebook and just go or go to Renee's Heart to Heart, and you'll see it posted on my Heart to Heart page. It is wonderful, and it starts out with simple things like smoking. You see a woman walking along smoking a cigarette, and the little girl behind her on the escalator has a cigarette in her little fat, pudgy hand like she's a grown-up, and they're going up the escalator, and mom drops the cigarette on the floor and puts it out with her foot right in the middle of, I don't know, it looks like an airport or some kind of a depot of some kind. And so does the little girl, and then crossing the road and dropping their soda cans. And these are the little things, you know. And it escalates to really poor behavior. A son and a dad, after the son has watched dad beat down mom a couple different times, he participates. And like I said, it escalates to really, really bad behavior. And I talk about this all the time, don't I, Shelley? I talk about it all the time. How can you expect, when everybody complains about our children and their behavior, what do they have that teaches them any different? It's
exactly.
Hard to find. It's really hard to find a valuable, I don't know, leader, teacher, somebody who really does the things. I mean, and it's up for grabs what's right and wrong. We both know that. It's up for grabs about what absolutely pristine behavior is, because I'm not sure I know what that is at all, because it's different in everybody's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly being kind, certainly being considerate, certainly being, not a litter bug, not rude, all those kind of things, it would seem like they would be natural for us. I mean, for me, who wants to spend a day like that? Who wants to have a day when everything makes you angry? I don't understand.
I
don't even understand the draw to that.
And I see it.
So,
I see it in other people. I see it sometimes in my family members, where it's almost like they're having a reaction to something that's, I use the word counterproductive, because they're getting themselves upset by something that somebody said or did to them. Meanwhile, nothing wrong was done. It's just that they wanted things to happen differently or people to act differently, but what they did differently wasn't wrong on the other person's part, and the other individual is allowing themselves to feel that they've been injured some way. So now it makes them act unkind or cold to the first family member. Meanwhile, nothing happened. And, you know, you sit back and you watch this playing out, and you're like, well, isn't that silly? Because now they're withdrawing themselves from love and affection. Because the other family member, because everybody else sees that they didn't do anything wrong, is still friendly with them. So it doesn't affect that individual. It affects the individual that's having the bad reaction to begin with, not the individual that they're upset with. Because that person is like, well, I didn't do anything wrong. If they want to be upset with me, let them be upset with me. You know, but it just causes undue stress and, stress for the individual that's allowing their emotions to go there. And then the rest of the family can feel it, and they just kind of avoid that person. So they've actually created a bigger bubble of negativity around themselves just by allowing themselves to have those type of perceptions. That's why it's really important not to be petty and not to have unreasonable expectations of people. You know, just because somebody did something that differently than the way you wanted to, doesn't mean that they've injured you. And people always go there for some reason. It's just bizarre.
Well, they find a difference of opinion somehow offensive and like they're being attacked. And that's really silly. That's really, really silly. You should be able to, to accept.
A lot of different ways to look at things.
Yeah. Well, I,
But I'm having a hard time. You're going to have to show me later. I still don't know how to work with Facebook. I'm not getting anything. I'm not seeing what you're trying to get me to see. But just tell me about the video, and then maybe you and I can talk later, and you can tell me how to find it.
Okay. Have you ever tried to just go to Renee's Heart to Heart?
Yeah, it's not taking me to any page. It's just your front page, but it's not taking me into any information. It's just Renee's Heart to Heart with three tabs. When I click on the tabs, it just tells me what they are, but it doesn't take me into any information.
Huh.
And it doesn't take me into any page. It's just the main page, and if I click on it, it just tells me what that. It gives me a description of what I just clicked on, but it doesn't take me to it. So I don't understand that.
Okay. All right. Well, it starts out, like I said, easy, smoking and throwing the cigarette on the ground and stomping it out, moving on with your day and drinking soda, walking down the street and just dropping your can on the street. And driving and giving somebody the finger and screaming four-letter words out the window, and it escalates to abuse and really, really poor behavior. And for me, I say this all the time: we're a monkey see, monkey do kind of people. If we see somebody, even as adults, if we see somebody do something time and time again, we somehow begin to accept it as some realm of normalcy, and we even fall into that that monkey see monkey do place because we see it being done so many times. I would never, ever, ever, ever step in front of somebody in a line. As a child, as a grown-up, I would never do it. I see it happen so much. The other day, I caught myself. Nobody's paying attention. So I walked ahead of everybody and got in line. I thought, oh, my God, I don't believe I did that. I mean, not that that's some horrible big deal or anything, but I would have never done that before, Shelley. But I see that so much. No regard. I see myself getting angry driving the car when somebody cuts me off and when somebody does things to me. I mean, I don't scream particular four-letter words out the window because that's just not my style, but I feel my anger. And many times on the turnpike, I've called 911 and reported somebody's behavior because every now and then when you're driving 85 miles an hour on the turnpike, which is the normal speed on the turnpike, by the way, if you're not going close to that fast, people blink their lights at you, beep their horn at you, get mean with you on the turnpike, especially if you're in the left lane. So I find myself participating in that. And there was a time in my life when I just would have slowed down and let them get the hell away from me. Mm-hmm. And now I see my aggressiveness, because I've watched so much of it, I tend to go there. And I don't like that. And I'm older, know better, understand that I'm doing it. I'm not 7. I'm not 8. I'm not 12.
Well, a lot of it has to do with all this law of attraction stuff I've been studying. The more that kind of stuff happens to me now, one of the things, like these books that I talk about, like Power of Now and stuff like that, and there's other books that aren't so esoteric, but basically what it's saying is that you're always where you're supposed to be at any time. So if you're online at a store and the person in front of you is having all kinds of problems and it's just taking them forever to get checked out, maybe you're being delayed for a good reason. Maybe if you had left the store right then, you would have gotten in a car accident, or maybe you're supposed to meet up with somebody, and if you're not delayed, you wouldn't have this chance meeting with somebody. And it's fun for me to go there now, because if I do get delayed, or if I do get stuck in traffic, or if I do get stuck online at a store, that's the first thing that pops into my mind. Instead of getting aggravated, which I used to do, I used to get like really, I'd start getting agitated, and then you're like putting that negativity out for everybody around you. Now, if I get delayed at a store, the first thing that pops into my head is, well, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be right now, so I'm just going to take a breath and deal with it. Now, if I'm late to go somewhere, then I may look for a different line to move on. I mean, I don't just stand there and deal with it. If I have an appointment I'm supposed to be to, then I might step off the line and try to fix the situation. But the bottom line is I don't get upset. Nina and I went shopping yesterday. We're driving to the parking lot, and we're approaching this parking spot, and somebody came up from the other side, and we actually got to the parking spot at the same time. But they could tell that we were, like, already heading there and we had our directional on. They actually completely stopped their car and waved us on, like, go ahead, you were here first. And it was refreshing because a lot of times at this time of the year, I mean, there was no parking space. And to have somebody be polite to us like that, because that's what we would do. So we do see some good behavior from people. And if we don't see good behavior, if that person had just shot in front of us, which has also happened to us, I don't get that well of anger anymore like I used to. And a lot of it is because of how I've changed my mindset. It keeps my blood pressure down. I don't like it when people act badly, but I don't allow it to affect the rest of my day. And that's something that I think is very, very important for people to learn. Unfortunately, you cannot go out and parent the rest of the world. You can't make every stranger you come to be responsible, be polite, you know. So if you do get in the mix with somebody who's treating you like that, the best thing you can do without judgment, because you don't know what they're going through, you don't know if this is how they act all the time or if they're just having a really bad day, okay, is just to say in your head, you know, I wouldn't act like that. I don't think it's appropriate, and I hope that person, they gets better. And just feel some compassion for them. Even if they act like a real jerk and they steal your parking spot, who knows what they're going through. Maybe they're always like that. Maybe they just need to really get someplace quickly and they need to park their car and get inside. You just don't know what people are going through. So I've developed a habit now of withdrawing from judgment and saying I'm always where I'm supposed to be at any given time, even if I'm being delayed, you know. And it really does put you in a different frame of mind, just that little tiny phrase. And I forgot what course I had read it in, but it made such an impact on me, and now I use it all the time, and it really helps my blood pressure not go to steaming level, which it used to, mm-hmm. all the time, mm-hmm. because I used to, like, really get pissed off at that behavior, and now it doesn't affect me at all. So it's kind of refreshing when you start taking that attitude. But it is difficult sometimes to see bad behavior from people, especially when they're around little kids, and you're like, wow, what kind of an example are they setting for their children when they act like that, when they're unkind or they litter or they're foul or they're flipping somebody off, and they have a little 3 or 4 year old in tow, you know. And it's all you can do is kind of say, you know, I wouldn't act that way around my child. I hope they're just having a bad day and that maybe, you know, they'll be a better example at some point.
Well, let's take the opportunity from what you just said to even add to that. What I just took from what Shelley said is that it helps her to understand a little bit about what it's like in that other person's shoes. She has learned how to give them the benefit of the doubt and realize that probably on a good day they wouldn't be behaving like that. Something must be going on in their life. And that probably isn't always true, but that's
right.
A nice assumption to make and shows your ability to be a little bit more compassionate, and a word that I use a lot, empathy,
mm-hmm.
and empathize with somebody else's plight on any given day. So that's a kind of a cool game to play with yourself, and can help you with the way you lead your children. You're in a store and somebody's being rude and pushes in front of you and swears at the cashier and carries on like that, and you look down at your 7-year-old and your 7-year-old's already making a face because they know that you're going to say something about this, because that's who you are. You're going to say something about the fact that somebody's really behaving badly. So maybe then the good thing, the lesson to exercise in that moment is, I don't know what's going on with that person, but they are really, really in a bad place today. So let's hope before they hurt anybody else's feelings or do anything stupid that something happens to change their day. Valuable, valuable lesson to teach to a young person, because it's about the empathy. It's about the understanding that something is going on in that other person's head. And
well, I loved it because Nina was telling me a story. This happened maybe, well, actually it was last year because it was in the heart of the Christmas season. Something had happened yesterday, and we were talking we had a couple of people that were actually went out of their way to be polite and helpful to us. And it was nice that we kind of saw that, because you always hear all the other stuff, especially during the holidays. We had one guy online yesterday at BJ's who saw that we only had a couple of items, and he had half a cart, and he told us to get in front of him. He said, you know, he says, this is the wrong time to come to BJ's if you've only got two or three items, he said, because you're never going to find anybody here who has less than half a cart. And he was laughing, and we only had two items, and he let us get in front of him, and that was sweet. And then the other person at another store that let us get the parking spot, you know, even though we got there at the same time, you know. So it was a couple of nice, polite, considerate people we saw. And when we were walking out, she was recalling a story from last year where she was online at Walmart, and these two women went at it big time. Nothing had really happened. They were just both in a bad mood. You said they had a lot of stuff to get. One of them got annoyed with the other. They didn't even know each other. And here they're going at it, yelling at each other. Oh, I'm sorry, it was at Publix, because she told me which cashier it was with, and I know the woman. It was at Publix it happened at. And these people are just like right in front of the poor cashier lady and everybody else in the store. These two perfect strangers are going at it. And Nina said that she doesn't know what happened to her. All of a sudden, these words just started coming out of her mouth. And usually she would just stand there and, like, be disgusted. And she said, you two ladies should be ashamed of yourself. She said, it's the holiday season. What are the two of you thinking? You don't know each other. She said, who knows if one of you is having a bad day? She says, and here you are just acting fools to each other. And she said she just went on this little tirade, you know. And she said both women looked at her like blinking, and then 2 minutes later, the first woman apologized to the woman behind her. That woman just crossed her arms, and everybody else looked at her like, you better apologize or you're going to get jumped. And when the woman turned around and saw everybody online looking at her like, okay, will she apologize to you? You're going to apologize to her? She turned around and she said, yeah, I apologize too. She said, I guess the stress of the day was just getting to me. She said, I don't even know why I said what I said. And they apologized to each other, finished their shopping, and left the store, and everything calmed down, you know. But my sister, she never does anything like that. It was just like a one-time thing. And she said the effect it had on these two grown adults, you know, because 9 times out of 10 when that stuff happens, everybody just stands there in shock or disgust. It ruins their day. It's bad energy. It just leaves it lingering in the air. And my sister was already having a bad day at the time and just didn't need any more lumped on top of it. And she kind of like lost it for a moment. But she said that, you know, and then she's standing there thinking these two women are going to jump her for getting involved. But it didn't happen. She both calmed down, because what she said is, instead of saying shut up or something like that, she said, you two ladies should be ashamed of yourself, especially during the holiday season, to be acting like that. You don't know each other. You're perfect strangers. You have no idea what kind of day the other one is having, and you're just taking an attitude for no reason. And it worked. I'm not saying it always would work. It's just interesting
I think in a lot of cases, just having somebody notice your I don't know what is going on in your life is enough to snap you out of a bad place. I believe that, because I believe when we get caught up in that kind of anxiousness and anger, we aren't aware a lot of times of what dribbles out of our yapper. We're just not, you know, and because we're in that different place. But it's funny how interacting, I'm going to share this story just because we can all use a good laugh, but it just shows you how things can snowball so unbelievably fast I'm in a deal store, one of those $5 deal stores where you can get everything for a dollar up to $5 and stuff like that. And
right.
I hear this mother telling her daughter to put things down and to get back over there by her and behave herself. And the daughter, who I'm going to say was between 5 and 6, and the little girl totally ignores her. I mean, completely. Doesn't even turn around and look at her when the mom's yelling at her. So I turned around and I looked, and the mother looks at me, and she's teary-eyed. And she says, she doesn't listen to me at all. And I said, tell her about Santa Claus. And she looked at me for a couple minutes, and I just smiled at her, and she said, will you talk to her? And I said, sure. So I said, come here. And the little girl comes walking over between her mother and I, and I said, do you understand that Santa Claus is watching you right now? She shakes her head no. And I said, he is. I said, he's watching all of us, even mommy, even me, everybody. I said, but you've got toys in your hands. And she looked at the toys. And that's what mom had been trying to get her to do, is put the toys back, because she wasn't going to buy them for her. And she said, yeah. And I said, so you think you deserve toys even when you're being not nice to your mom. I said, that's the only mom you're ever going to have right there. I said, and Santa Claus is watching her to make sure she's a good mommy, but he's watching you to make sure you're a good little girl. I said, otherwise, he won't bring you any presents. Do you believe in Santa Claus? She adamantly shook her head. And I said, well, I said, this is the time of year when he expects all of us to be super nice to each other. And she goes, okay. And I said, you promise me you're going to be nicer to your mommy? She looks at her mother, looks at me, and she goes, yeah. So I put my hand out, and she shook my hand and squeezed my fingers. And the mother looks at me, tears streaming down her face, and says to me, thank you. I said, I don't know if it's going to work, honey, but it's worth a shot, right? So I walk away, and I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking to myself, it must be, I don't remember ever getting quite that overwhelmed, but I do remember feeling overwhelmed. In later years when kids were older and I couldn't get through to them, I remember feeling overwhelmed. Sometimes today I get feeling overwhelmed about my children's behavior, even though they're all adults with their own families. So I had some immediate empathy for her. But just to show you how a day can like get away from you. I go up, pay for my stuff. I bought some stuff for one of the kids that I know that's just getting started again, some glasses and some stuff like that, little cheap stuff at the store, but I know will help them because they're setting up a kitchen and everything, you know, and some gift bags, Christmas gift bags. And I said to the cashier, who was very sweet and nice, I said, can I take this cart outside? And she goes, yeah. So I put everything in the cart, and I walk over to the door, and I open the door, and I can't, it's not a self-opening door. So I'm pulling on the door, and I'm pushing the cart, and I'm like ramming myself into it, and it won't go. She comes running over. She says, oh, I'm sorry, I have to unlock the wheel. I said, why didn't you tell me that? I didn't have to take this out. And she says, no, it's okay. So she unlocks the wheel. I finally get through the door. I go over to my car. The parking lot is relatively empty. And I open up the back door, and I go to put these big gift bags in the car. Well, the wind was blowing like crazy. This was Saturday when I left, after I left all of you guys. And the wind catches one of the bags and blows it way up in the air like a kite. So I start laughing, right? And I turn around, and it lands. And I go after the gift bag, and every time I get within touching distance, it blows again further away. Well, I'm cracking up because this looks like a cartoon show, right? Here's big old fat old Remy running down the parking lot trying to catch a bag that every time I get within touching distance, it goes a little bit further away. So I'm still laughing about it. I look over, I hear this noise, and there's my cart, Shelley, with my purse and all the rest of my bags. It now has been caught in the wind and is going down the parking lot. Like,
oh my
I don't know,
God.
I mean, fast, not just rolling, fast down the, like somebody's pushing it, right? So
wow.
Then I really start cracking up. I turn around and take this old, if you will, leap, catch the bag, put it in my car. I'm still giggling about all this, looking around for cameras because I'm sure I must be on candid camera. And I go after the cart, and the closer I get to the cart, the faster it goes. And I'm like, by this time, I am really laughing. You know me, and when I get laughing. And I'm like,
yep.
I cannot believe this is happening to me, right? Finally, I catch the cart, hysterically laughing, figure, because it's got a lock on it, I better take it back to the store. Get back up to the store. I'm pushing away. I open the door. The minute you get near the door, the cart locks again. So here's me ramming myself into the basket again. The girl comes over, opens the door. She says, oh, I have to unlock it again when you come through the door. And I said, am I on candid camera? She goes, huh? And I said, never mind. I walked away hysterically laughing. But I thought to myself, you know, after what happened with the little girl and her mom, I guess I just needed another perspective of how things can happen to change your
mm-hmm.
whole day. Now, if I'd have been in a bad place, would I'm kind of silly like that, so I probably still would have been laughing. But what would that have done to somebody else, you know?
Right.
And
you've seen stuff like out, you know, somebody drops something or spills something, and then they get so upset by it that they throw something else or they break whatever. I mean, I'm talking because there was a time in my life when I would react like that. You know, I'd drop something, I'd get so pissed off over it that I'd throw something else and break it. So here I took a bad situation, I made it worse, I got myself more upset, instead of just sitting there and like, laughing that I was clumsy or something like that. The other day I dropped a salt grinder. You know, we have these little grinders for salt and pepper here, and they're small.
Mm-hmm.
They're the size you put on the table, not the big ones, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I dropped it, and instead of getting all freaked out and all, you know, annoyed and everything, which a couple of years ago I would have. I mean, a lot of what I talk about with myself now has really just transpired in the last few years. And it's a lot of fun for me now to recognize some of the changes in myself. But I didn't get upset. So what I did is I took little pinches of the salt and I threw it over my shoulder. I said, well, this is actually
mm-hmm.
good luck, isn't it? So like
mm-hmm.
you said,
mm-hmm.
I make a game out of a lot of things. I make a game out of the way people treat me. I make it a game out of my own foibles. And if I drop something or I spill something or I trip or something like that. And you know, and you can't always do that with life. I mean, sometimes things happen that are serious or are tragic or something like that, you know. But when you can be lighthearted, like don't sweat the small stuff, when you can be more lighthearted and have more humor about the normal day-to-day nonsense that everybody has, getting delayed on a line, tripping, dropping something, you know, going to reach for something on your desk and you know, accidentally shoving a pile of papers on the floor or something. You know, if you can laugh at yourself and make those times not so significant, then when the big things happen, you have the strength of character to deal with them. You have you're more
That's
uplifted.
Right.
But if every little thing bothers you, if every little thing destroys you and angers you, then when something big happens, you're devastated. You're completely inconsolable. So, you know, and that's one of the things, that's how I look at life now. You know, I'm not going to act about a little thing like it's a big thing.
Well, I think that it's imperative to be able to laugh at yourself anyway. People who can't laugh at themselves and take themselves so seriously are usually very unhappy. It doesn't serve you in any way. I mean, some things you need to take seriously because they're serious things. But most of the time, you should be able to laugh at yourself and let go of all of the anger. And I've watched the transition with Shelley, and what she says is true. There was a time because of her earlier life when she believed that if she didn't fight with every ounce of being, then she wouldn't get what she was supposed to have or what she needed or what she should have. So what she did learn, the biggest lesson that she learned, is a lot of times you really weren't supposed to have it anyway. There's always that. But the biggest thing was that you can get things that seem to be out of reach much easier with kindness and paying attention to another person's point of view and weighing all your options before you fight for it. Some things you do have to fight for. And I'm pretty sure if I was in a street fight, Shelley would be somebody I wanted standing beside me. Don't get me wrong. She's still got that part of her. But she learned that everything that you come across isn't worth that kind of anger. And that's a big lesson for all of us. That's a big, big lesson for all of us. So I have seen that transition, and she's right. She's brought herself to a totally, totally different place than when I first met her, gosh, almost, what, 13 to 15 years ago almost, isn't it? We're into 2015. I think we met in 2002. Was it 2002?
Yep, exactly.
So it is different. But again, one of the things that makes that important is, say, we're not talking about kids. Say you're the boss someplace. You're the leader in a business. Maybe you're purely the head cashier at Publix. And you kind of set precedence for the other cashiers because you've been there the longest. You know the most about the cash register. You know the most about the codes, all the things that go with being somebody who stands all day in a very arduous job, as far as I'm concerned, ringing up people's groceries and trying to be nice. If you're having a bad day and the girl at the register next to you just started 2 weeks ago and your behavior is bad, her behavior is going to start being bad because you're the one she's going to look up to regardless of anything else, because it just boils down to that. You've been here the longest, you know the most, so people are going to do what you do. Period.
Right.
Even in some cases when they know better themselves, because they'll think, well, I must be doing that wrong because, you know, Renee's been here for 33 years. She knows what she's doing, so I guess I'll do it that way. So that's what happens with leaders. That's really what happens with leaders. It's a part of what is so disheartening about what's going on with Bill Cosby right now. And when I saw this video, I thought to myself, it is such a high hill with a very, very, very small snowball at the top. And when this is all said and done, somebody that almost everybody I know has admired, laughed at, respected, felt sorry for when his son died, mused at the fact that he stayed married to, I think her name was Camille, and all this other kind of stuff, and brought himself and has such an innate understanding for people, hence some of his comedy shows all about drinkers and who different people are. I mean, they were right on, right? They were spot on about people.
Yep.
So we all enjoyed him, and here he is with this amazing, upsetting, disheartening dark side. And now, even though we may never know how far it went, because now, you know, people are coming out of the woodwork for their claim to fame and their moment in the spotlight, and I'm sure some of the circumstances are embellished for the sake of, sensationalism. But there's something wrong, and we know that now. There's something wrong. Now, whether or not he's guilty of all the things he's done, we'll probably never know unless he stands up and says, yes, I did this. No, I didn't do that.
Yeah, the only thing I have to say about that.
But he was a leader, Shell. He was a leader.
Right. I have, there's a couple of different. Yeah, there's a couple of different ways of looking at that, though. I don't know that anybody's doing this to get limelight, because this is absolutely negative limelight. It could be that there are people, like what happened to Michael Jackson, that see he's got deep pockets and just want money from him, okay? But more than likely, what happens with sexual abuse, more so than any other type of crime, is that a lot of times the person who is the subject of the sexual abuse sometimes, in many cases, blames themselves. They feel that maybe they put out mixed messages, they're questioning their own behavior, did I bring this on myself? And a lot of times, if they're isolated and they think they're the only one it ever happened to, a lot of times they stay in silence. That's why a lot of times when you see these rape trials become, you know, like in the news, become public news, all of a sudden you see other women coming out of the woodwork, because now all of a sudden they realize they're not the only one. And there is some sort of bravery in numbers. So in the situation with Bill Cosby, it's frustrating because, first of all, we don't know if it's true yet. On one hand, it seems unlikely that there would be dozens of stories if it's not true. I still have a hard time wrapping my brain around the fact that somebody who is so iconic as Bill Cosby could have that dark side. So that's where some of my resistance is. But on the other hand, it is not unlikely that if this is true, and I'm saying if, I'm not saying it is, if it is true, that all of a sudden all these women would be coming out, okay? Because if you've heard some of these stories, it goes back decades, and these women have been living in silence. This is something that happened to them. They decided to go on with their lives. They probably didn't want to mess with him because he was so iconic, and if they felt it was an isolated situation, that it only happened to them, they were probably embarrassed, you know, kind of criticizing their own behavior, did I give them the wrong idea or whatever, you know. So, you know, just because these women didn't speak out all along doesn't mean their stories don't have credibility. And just because there's a dozen or more doesn't mean their stories do. So that I just wanted to put those couple of different thought patterns out there. It really, we have to wait and see if more information comes out, if any stories get substantiated, if he admits anything. In the meantime, it is sad, though, to have somebody so iconic in such a negative, negative limelight right now.
Well, and again, you know, you're right. I mean, you know, it's and everybody is. When I say limelight, let me explain that one first. We're talking about people, almost all of them, who were in the limelight at one time or on that journey to be celebrities. Most
right.
of them. Famous models and actresses and things like that.
Right, right.
In the psyche of somebody like that who perhaps, put a lot of effort into being that person and it didn't work out and now they're, nobody knows them. When I say that they're looking for that 60 seconds again of limelight, it's because of that mindset of what they once were. I don't think anything about it is something I'd want to share with everybody, myself, but I've never been, a top model that everybody looked at on the front of Vogue magazine, so I don't know if I would feel that way now as I'm older. The newest one is one of his confidants who's like 82 or 83 years old, and he says that he had to stand guard on the door, and then he was told to send money to certain girls, and that's what his whole comment was. So, I mean, it gets deeper and deeper, but there is a lot of controversy about the fact that everybody wonders if that's why some of these people who haven't been in the limelight for all these years, it's not just about, getting their claim to fame right now for the first time ever. It's an old thing that they lost and they're trying to recover. There could be
right.
some validity
right.
to that. But, of course, you're right. That's a terrible thing to bring to light about yourself. And you're right about the other thing you said, too. And we see that time and time again about a lot of the stories we do, where when something like this happens to you, you question whether or not it's your fault. So that's we hear that a lot. So I would agree with you. And the only reason I'm even bringing him up today, because every time I have him on my agenda and then I change my mind and don't want to talk about him because it's so iffy, I brought him up today because he was a leader.
He was recognized as a good dad. The Cosby Show itself, the cartoon show, all was in support of a family, of living together with different personalities. I mean, that's what the whole thing was about. So he taught lessons to most of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think I learned lessons from the Cosby Show.
I know. Isn't it disturbing that two of the most iconic fathers on TV have both been revealed to have such dark sides? The guy from Seventh Heaven and now Bill Cosby. It's almost like they go after, if it's true, I'm saying, and again, I keep saying I'm qualifying my statement because I'm not saying it is true, but if it is true, it's almost like they seek these roles because it gives them some sense of normalcy, and maybe they do it in spite of or because of the darker side, because here they can be more in control, and you know, maybe they recognize some level of decency and they want to project that, so they do it through a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like comedians that get on stage and they're in pain, and they get on stage and they make people laugh, you know, meanwhile they have this darkness going on inside their own heads, but they have a propensity to want to get out there and share some type of humor. You know, it's almost like a pull to them. You know, I'm wondering if people that have this dark side are pulled to play these wholesome roles as a way of tapping into that because they recognize they're too dark.
Well, that's an interesting observation, Shel. Very interesting observation. And I think that if we really researched that and delved into some of the darker psyches of, some of the human monsters that we've read about and learned about in our lifetime, we'll probably find that that's true. Wasn't it John Gacy who was clown? Wasn't he the one that clown in his work life? He pretended to be a clown and play with children and everything.
Yep.
So there's probably some validity to that, for sure.
Look at Dahmer. I mean, a massive serial killer and a gruesome serial killer. He was also a cannibal. And yet everybody who knew him said he was very personable, very charming. So he knew how to act around people. He knew how to act in a way that drew people in and that he had this really, really dark side. So it's interesting, a little disturbing, that people that have dark sides like that seem to know how to tap into normalcy and are almost drawn to it.
Well, I just said that the other day. We were having a conversation, myself and some of the older grandchildren, and we were talking about insanity and people who are bipolar versus real sanity issues and all that kind of stuff. And I said, when you have somebody who has poor behavior all the time and doesn't seem to fit in and says things that are off the wall and things like that, their issues are different. Somebody who's truly, this is my opinion again, I want to say that, like Shelley just said, and we have plenty of them, Shelley and I have our own opinions about a lot of things due to life. But most of the people that I've met in my life, the time that I would consider really having balanced issues with their sanity, they can make you believe they're anybody you want them to be. That's what's scary about them. And that's what's about them. They can make you believe that they are a saint, that they're loving, funny, and have the most winning personality. But then if you catch them on a day when they don't care how you feel about them, or they're angry with you, or something has happened to ruin the relationship you have with them, then you may get a glimpse of that other side. Those are the people that you want to be very careful around, and those are the people that probably need the most help. So, and that could be what's happening here. I don't know. I just watched I just watched Bill Cosby. He had a standing ovation here in Florida this week. He did a one-man show like he's done so many of, and standing ovation. And he got up and walked off the stage, and, I mean, he's an old man now. And
yep.
There seems to be a serenity and a strength in him still, which
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean a damn thing, because if he really
yeah, it doesn't
is,
mean
this,
anything. Mm-hmm.
You know, then he could pretend to be anybody he wants to be. And a lot of the times that we talk about entertainers, well, like Robin Williams, now there's an article out about the fact that his mental illness went much deeper than anybody knew, and his wife now is sharing things about him hearing voices and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, actors and actresses who can put them, I mean, if you talk to or listen to something from a really renowned actor, they talk about getting into the personality, the life, the behavior of the person they're portraying. So maybe it's a source of escape, Shel. Maybe it's a
yep.
place where
Robin
they
Williams,
can be.
I had actually a talk show with Robin Williams years ago. This is when he was a younger man. And he actually admitted to doing a lot of LSD when he was younger. Because of a lot of his depression and things like that, he actually liked, like, being somewhere else. And when, you know, it, more than likely, I mean, he was a brilliant, creative, you know, genius when it came to that kind of stuff. But you can't do drugs like heroin and LSD, and these are the, well, not so much heroin. Heroin's physically addictive. But LSD can do permanent damage to the way your brain works. And it's very likely that a lot of what he did as a younger man literally came back to haunt him later on, because it could have done permanent damage to his brain that might have taken, you know, decades to develop into a psychosis, like you said, if he's hearing voices and things like that. So it's such a sad story that there wasn't anybody that could help him, you know, that he didn't see the right people. I believe that there is help for people that suffer that way. And unfortunately, a lot of your mainstream people, mainstream actors, actresses, people that don't look into holistics and things like that, if they just go to a psychiatrist and not someone more holistic in nature, they're just going to get pumped full of drugs. And a lot of times that just compounds the problem. Sometimes it's the solution. Sometimes it compounds the problem. And I don't think what was done for Robin Williams, obviously, I mean, it's not my opinion, it's obvious, was the right course for him, because it ended up very tragic.
Well, and that's you know, and that's happened in our history on more than one occasion. So, but I think, like I said, I think that when we talk about people that are leaders, this is some of the things that we have to take into account. So while I'm talking about this, I'm thinking about all the times that I know Bill Cosby and Robin Williams were the lead speakers at graduations at famous colleges, and
mm-hmm.
With several thousand beginners, if you will, into the adult world now with education and training and all this kind of stuff under their belt, making decisions on which path they're going to take with, you know, what they've learned and what they've accomplished. And in so many of those times, Bill Cosby, Robin Williams, why can't I think of his name? I should look through the one from Seventh Heaven. What was his name, Shel?
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on his name, too. Isn't that silly? You know, I have it written down. Hold on.
I do, too. It's here in my
Oh, why I'm drawing a blank on it? Because, I like the actor. I'm not happy about the news about him, but I like the actor.
Stephen Collins.
There you go.
Stephen,
thank you.
Yeah. And he's another one. I mean, you know, and he had a lot of young people that I'm sure took his words to heart and his information mm-hmm. and leadership to heart. So now somebody somewhere should be speaking out to these young people and understanding that in a situation like this, the words mm-hmm. that were these kind of people who knew how to live the right way, because they did in their upfront and visible life. So I still think you should, you know, give some validity to the things that they said to all of you and the things that they've said to us and the lessons that we've learned from them.
Exactly.
Something like this shouldn't take that away, although I'm sure if I were to say that to the family members of some of the people now that are coming out of the woodwork to say how they were abused, would like to smack me for saying that. But you do have to separate the two things, and you do have to...
And I agree with that, because when you think about these iconic figures, even when they fall from grace, so to speak, the things that they say are powerful. Again, the portrayal that he put out there for people to see was a good example. In other words, he set a good example. Regardless of what went on behind the scenes and what he was as a real person, the portrayal of the father, what he does on his stand-up routine, these really are good things, because he makes you take a look at life and have some humor about it. Steve Collins, the portrayal of the father he played was superb. I mean, he was such an awesome character, you know, and there are men like that. So, you know, I don't believe in throwing away, even if you come up with something that somebody said and then you find out something bad about that person, but that thing they said inspired you, those comments can still stand on their own. I mean, Hitler said some things that were also inspirational, and then look what he turned into. But in his younger years, he had said some things that were very powerful. And if he hadn't gotten all twisted around and vicious, you know, he could have been a very iconic, inspirational figure. But he just went darker and darker and darker, and he got into hate and things like that. But as a younger man, he was actually... He actually had some positive things to say about interactions between people. And, you know, and you actually, there's shows on Hitler that show how his personality disintegrated. And then he just got into the power and abused it, you know. But you can't hear something positive and inspirational, then find out something bad about the person that said it and then discount it. If it impacted you in a good way and it made you make good changes in your life, you should stay with that. Discount the person, but don't discount the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree. And I think that that's important for any of you that are now lamenting putting so much stock in something that was said to you by any of the people that we've talked about today. But we're out mm-hmm. of time, and I want to thank everybody. It's going to be a real blazer. 87
I know.
Degrees.
Oh,
and,
yikes, I know.
There is a bad accident right now. I'm seeing it on TV, so it looks like they're not telling me whether it's the turnpike or 95, but somebody is at a standstill because there's a jackknife truck. So, yeah, really at a standstill. So check it out before you get on any of those roads. But mm-hmm. we're not going to do a show on Thanksgiving Day. I want to let everybody know that way up front. Shelley and I have decided that it will be a very busy day for both of us, so we're going to spend time with our families and hope that you all are able and blessed to do the same thing. But another thing I want to put in your ear, if you have nanny cams or cameras set up for anything, all the technology that's available to us today, I came across a very interesting story about some people who are actually hacking into those personal cameras and watching everything you do in your home,
oh, wow.
in your car, wherever. So give some before you set something like that up in your children's bedrooms, your bedroom, etc., please. And we will do a show about this once I get more information. So go out, everybody, and have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow, Bullies to Buddies Day, and have a good one. God bless, and thank you. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone. We'll speak to you in the morning.